This podcast was originally live streamed on the Non Sequitur Show on YouTube. New episodes air weekdays, Monday through Friday, at 8 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/nonsequiturshow. Make sure you never miss a live stream by visiting www.nonsecshow.com/schedule. For the latest news, polls and updates throughout the day, follow us on Twitter at nonsecshow or facebook.com/nonsecshow. That's NONSEQ show. If you'd like to get exclusive content, bi-weekly private hangouts with Kyle and Steve, backstage access to chat with guests after shows hosted on your channel and much more, become a Patreon saint of Non Sequitur. It ensures we continue to improve our show and brings you into the process at the same time. Visit patreon.com/nonsequitur today while the limited spots are still available.
The following podcast is intended for those who believe bold ideas are righteous, unique perspectives are gospel, and strong opinions are sacred. This is Non Sequitur. Never follow. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
Keep up the good work, man, and stay flat, okay?
Okay, I'm a flat earther.
I think I'm getting the hang of this, finally.
I think you are.
That's excellent.
Had a practice today.
Yeah, well.
Oh my god, my cup. Look at my cup. It matches the stars. This is freaking awesome.
He gets so excited so easily. For the fourth time tonight, you're at least seeing me again. So hello again for the fourth time. It's nice to see you all on this Saturday night. I think we're going to have a really cool discussion now. I think everybody in the room knows everybody, right?
Intimately.
No, Ali and I have met briefly, and we've emailed.
Good deal. And actually, Steve, here in a minute, I'm going to let you introduce everybody since you go back. I just wanted to say that on the 16th, Trevor Valley will be back with us. He will be debating a gentleman from, he used to work at InfoWars, and they're going to be debating each other. They have a really heated feud on Twitter. Trevor is saying that he's going to smash his face in and embarrass him on the show. So it should be good. But yeah, Steve, if you will, please do the introductions. I know it's late, so I'm not going to waste any more time. We'll just jump right into it.
Sure, let's get into it. So we got Flight to Flat Earth back. Flight to Flat Earth has been with us a few times. He's ex-Navy nuke, as myself, but the British version. Basically the same physics, but only spelled differently, because they use funny little things like you and weird stuff. But he's come back on. He's going to have a discussion with one of a friend that I've had known for a very long time, actually. Ali B and I, we go way back. He's like one of the first flat earthers to start coming around my channel. And I think Fight the Flat Earth said it best. He's probably one of the more intelligent flat earthers out there, if that's something that we can wrap our heads around. I'm voting for him tonight. I'm actually thinking that Ali B might change his position. I'm hoping, he's been good to me. He's been good to my channel.
Maybe he'll change my position.
No pressure.
He might. You know what? That might happen too. But either way, I'm going to sit back and I'm going to enjoy this conversation. So, because you're dealing with somebody who's not, I know, is not a Poe, and somebody who's not your bottom of the barrel person out there. So, I like Ali. He's a good guy for a flat earther.
All right. Well,
no, appreciate it.
Let's let them introduce themselves and tell us a little bit about how they got involved in the Flat Earth discussion. And we'll start with the new guest first, Ali.
Oh, nice one, Kyle. Thanks. Well, I've been in this discussion maybe about 5 years. As Steve says, we go back a bit. I can't remember the first video. Could have been Eric DeBay or whatever. But I just kind of laughed and I kind of started looking into it, and I found out that the evidence was lacking, or the evidence that was getting produced, or the, shall we say, the quality of information, well, didn't satisfy me. And here I am still thinking the same as I thought then. So that's about that.
All right. And fight the flat earth. Should we scream so you feel more home? Fight the flat earth.
No, please, it's really early in the morning here and my daughter wake up. I've not been in the discussion that long. I literally only started looking into it about a year ago, and Ali was actually one of the first videos I came across. And then a couple of months ago, my wife told me to stop sitting around doing nothing and do a YouTube channel. So I did as she said. And I've really enjoyed doing it and looking into the physics of it. And I feel like I've actually relearned a lot of stuff myself. A lot of the flat earthers that I've met are just so unwilling to actually have a discussion, or are complete pose. So I'm actually really happy to have a debate with someone like Ali, who I think I can actually have a proper conversation with. So, yeah. How you doing, Ali? Nice to meet you, mate.
Yeah. How you doing?
Sweet.
Tired, but we get there.
Well, where shall we begin?
I don't know.
Well, can I ask, what's your biggest reason for thinking that the Earth is flat?
Well, there's a few things, but as you know, we had a discussion the last time about our attitude indicator, and you flung in pendulous veins, and you know, you admitted that you didn't know enough about the subject. You go away, read up about it. So this was kind of, we could start there if you wanted to.
If you
want to describe.
Yeah, I mean, I've gone and studied some maintenance manuals and stuff for a lot of aircraft instruments, and tried to look into the operations of them. I'd like to ask you how you think pendulous veins work, and we could go from there. So, you know, what do you think the pendulous veins do?
Well, they correct the any like perturbation or any movement of the gyroscope off its fixed position where it gets where it's set, where it's calibrated from. It'll hold that position. And if it starts to process or move out of that vertical or perpendicular to where it was calibrated, it will correct it through like inertia. It's like inertia because it has a bit of spring where it's attached, so it has a bit of inertia, and that actually corrects the gyroscope back to its upright position.
First off, the springs haven't been used in pendulous veins for many years. They work now off of a fluid that is moved about, based, like you said, as there's perturbations, a fluid will move about. And what the fluid does is there's four parts that allow air in and out of the pendulous veins, and there's two sets of opposite veins that are attached. As the gyro tilts left or right, it covers the fore or the aft parts, the ports, and then it causes it to close, and that creates a pressure that will force the gyro to right itself until there's an equilibrium in the pressure. And the thing is that what makes it actually do the correction in the first place is the force of gravity. That's what's making the actual veins that are connected move. As the plane moves, it's gravity that is causing them to shift and causing that movement within the pendulous veins for the ports to get covered. So the operation of, I mean, there is some models of pendulous veins that instead of using a fluid that covers ports, they use like ball bearings that move around on a circular disc on each side. But in 90% of the ones that I read up about, it is the versions that are connected and have a fluid that covers ports to allow air in and out, which won't work without a downward force. And unless you can give me something else that is causing that downward force, then my conclusion is that it's gravity that allows the pendulous veins to correct the perturbation of the actual mechanism.
Right. Well, the spin of the gyroscope creates that force, the centrifugal force. It overcomes gravity.
What, so you're saying gravity is
gravity? Well, look, gravity is one of the weakest. The spin, you can actually prove it if you... Right, we can agree that... Do you hold true to that gravity gives a thing weight? It creates the weight because if you put on a scale, it's the pull of gravity that's pulling against the mass of the object.
Do you know what the mathematical formula is for weight?
Well, I don't care about that. I'm just asking, is that how you see it? We don't need to go into maths. Just as, would you agree that...
It's the pull. It's the correlation between the mass of the object and the gravitational force that gives it the actual amount of force going down.
What I mean, the weight. We can say it gives it the weight.
Yeah.
But a gyroscope can overcome that. If you get, for example, a disc and you put it on the end of a stick, on the end of a bit of metal, that it's free to spin, and you get that up to certain revolutions per minute, you can lift that basically with one arm, whereas if you try it when it's not spinning, it's still the same weight. The only thing that's changed is this thing spinning. So gravity doesn't affect the pendulous vanes or any of that gyroscope spinning at all whatsoever. It overcomes that's why they use it out in space to correct their attitude. They use gyroscopes inside that because it doesn't get affected by gravity.
If you're saying that a gyroscope can just correct itself like that, then pendulous vanes would be surplus to requirements because they are what...
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. That's what I'm saying. When they're only to help the correction, because when it's inside the instrument panel, it's surrounded with electromagnetic forces. It's due to vibration and everything, so it will. All the forces acting on all the different acting upon it under acceleration as well. It'll react on that, and it has to correct itself under acceleration or a fast movement. However, it corrects due to the pendulous vanes that adjust it back into its upright position, and it'll stay there forever and ever.
When you're saying about inertia, that is actually part of the operation of the pendulous.
One second. And the only way that gyroscope is going to come off of the earth is if it's when it slows down. And that's when your so-called gravity, when it starts slowing down, it starts going like that. And that's when your so-called gravity comes into operation. But before that happens, it's defined gravity. So gravity doesn't come into that. So you can't say gravity inside... attitude indicator causes that, because it's just nonsense. It goes against physics.
Okay. I mean, I have to completely disagree that it goes against physics, because it all actually agrees with the maths and physics of the model. You're talking about inertia, and that's part of how they operate. When an aircraft turns, inertia causes the vanes to lag
inertia?
A little.
Explain to me then what inertia is. Actually, what is it?
I have to get the actual formula. I'm buzzed on coffee
right
now.
No, not the formula. Just explain what it is. Is it a force? The
formula is weight equals mass times g. By the way, if you're looking for that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, inertia. When you're in a car and you stick on the brakes, it is a force. It's classed as a fictitious force or a pseudo force.
Inertia is the resistance to change of direction or vector due to applied external force.
That's exactly. So if you throw a ball, that's got inertia, and it's also got potential energy, but you can only measure that when it hits something, right? But it's got inertia, and that inertia is just exactly what Steve says. It's just a force introduced to an object.
Okay, yeah, but inertia isn't the entire operation of it, because the actual pendulous vanes themselves are suspended and held in place by gravity. And when the aircraft turns, an inertia of the vanes cause a little lag, which then creates a force moving back and forth and accelerating as it would tilt as the aircraft goes forward or backwards, and do the same as I was explaining earlier with covering the ports on the pendulous vanes. the whole operation of it requires a downward force on the actual veins because they are suspended by, you know, and held down. And if there isn't a down, you're saying about there's electromagnetic forces or whatever in there, that's not going to
change. Yeah, that's what they are. That is a fact.
What's a fact? The electromagnetic force is going to change what a...
They cause perturbations in our gyroscope, and that's why they have it.
See, now, all the operations manuals of all the pendulous veins I was reading would disagree with you. So can you explain why this the information that I got was actually from operations manuals and manuals of when they were put together.
Yeah.
So why would the people that are putting it together be given all this information that isn't right?
Well, that is right, because if you've ever been in a plane, it shakes. So there's forces, acceleration.
That doesn't change the pendulous veins require a downward force.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't require it.
Well, according to the manuals, it does.
The force is caused by the disc that's spinning, or the centrifugal force of the gyroscope. That's what's keeping it upright.
The pendulous veins are separate to the gyroscope. They're not connected to it.
When it moves due to vibration or magnetic or whatever, when it starts coming off its center, like the Earth is meant to have, right? When it starts processing or whatever, it's when the pendulous veins kick in, and that's when they do their job. It's got nothing to do with gravity. Because gravity doesn't come
again. It does because there has to be a downward force on the pendulous veins.
The centrifugal force overcomes gravity.
You keep saying it overcomes gravity, now, and then telling me gravity doesn't exist. But let me talk for a second. Right? The fact is that there needs to be a downward force on the pendulous veins. A downward force, not electromagnetic force, nothing else. The pendulous veins, which are separate to the actual gyroscope, need a downward force for them to be able to operate.
Yeah, no, they're actually attached to the gyroscope.
Yes,
they're suspended above the ports within the
actual yes, and they're attached.
Everybody's talking over everybody, and nobody can hear anything. So we got to go one at a time. Make sure that there's a little bit of a lag with the system. Just if it feels like you're getting stepped on, I'm sure that's not intentional. Just let each other finish the thought, because coming out in the feed, you can't understand anything.
Okay, let me just reiterate that the information that I got from the operations manuals of the actual pendulous veins, and I could provide you with the links for where I got this and all afterwards if you'd like, you know, they actually within them say that there needs to be, that there is a downward force on the veins that are suspended above the ports, and they're held in place by gravity. The word gravity is actually used within the manuals of the, you know, the operation manuals of these things. So why would they be saying that? Why would they be saying that there needs to be a downward force, which they actually name as gravity, acting on the pendulous veins, if it's not true? Remember, this is based on what the people need to be able to operate, maintain, and build these things.
Right, but as I'll reiterate, the pendulous veins are attached to the gyroscope, and the spin of the gyroscope overcomes gravity, because if not, then, right, if not, and I know what you're going to say to this, if not, and it's such a cheap shot, this, but the mass of the aeroplane surely would affect the gyroscope. It's gravity of that aeroplane. Surely that aeroplane has gravity.
Ali, I'm going to tell you, I don't think you know what a gyroscope is. A gyroscope is an instrument that maintains its rigidity in 3D space, no matter what's happening, unless there's another force acting upon it.
Yep.
Yeah, you're agreeing, yep. But you're making my point for me. Yep.
But I'm talking about the forces that are electromagnetic. In an attitude indicator, we're talking specifically about an attitude indicator here. If you want to put it up in space,
I can talk to you about that, which links to the operation.
They use it to adjust, because it's not, they use it to adjust the ISS, the attitude of the ISS and everything. They use
backwards there.
It's not affected by gravity, because they push against the actual spin of the gyroscope. So it's actually that maintains its space, and it pushes against and adjusts the attitude of the ISS. And that's the strength of gyros. And that's not getting affected by gravity.
Well, everything's affected by gravity. But again, when you're talking about the attitude indicator, can I talk, please? Can you please stop interrupting me? Thank you. I'd really appreciate it. Thank you. Like, the attitude indicator is actually told what to do by all the pendulous vanes and the operation of the gyroscope. It's not the other way around. The attitude indicator, the artificial horizon, is told what to do based on the operation of these things. It's not the other way around. So, and then I have to go back to the point that there has to be a downward force on the actual pendulous vanes. We're not talking about the actual gyroscope, because the pendulous vanes are suspended above the ports, within the whole thing, and they are held in place by gravity. These words came directly from the operations manual of a company that builds these gyroscopes that go on planes. And again, I can give you the links for the information of where I got this. So they themselves say that there has to be a downward force on the vanes that are suspended above the ports, and that is gravity. And then the whole operation of it, when the aircraft's moving and the inertia and the lag, it creates the force, and then all that tells the attitude indicator and the artificial horizon what to do. It is all reliant upon gravity. And unless you can give me an alternative for what is causing that downward force on the vanes that are suspended above the ports, what is that downward force? There has to be something that is giving that a vector, a downward force. And the only thing that there is that would describe it accurately, along with the mass of the plane and everything else that is going on, is gravity. The law of gravity, which is a mathematical formula which can predict everything, can explain everything that's going on. I can give you the math and the physics that explain exactly what is happening now that I have studied the operation of the pendulous vanes. Gravity is the answer. I'm done.
Well, that's what we'll just have to disagree on, because I'm still maintaining the spin of the gyroscope overcomes the gravity, and you can prove.
Can I ask why you think that, Ali? I know this is between you guys, but this is physics, so. Why do you think it overcomes gravity? If I can ask.
Well, they used that system, like in the lunar. They used the gyroscopes in the lunar modules, right? And they use it to adjust the attitude. If they were going to get affected by gravity. If you know, they wouldn't know which way was down.
I don't understand.
They wouldn't know.
No, right, I'm quite confused as to what you're saying. I mean, they maintain their rigidity in 3D space.
They wouldn't know which way is down, right?
No. What I'm asking is, right?
So the gyroscopes in space, in a proper vacuum where it's floating, or whatever, yeah, held a position and weren't affected by the gravity of the moon, and it flew over it. So therefore, the gyroscopes overcome gyroscopes. The force, the centrifugal force, negates gravity.
No.
And it's nothing.
I mean, you are right that the centrifugal force is stronger than gravity. I mean, many orders of...
Thank you very much.
That's not why a gyroscope works. I think either you guys are a little off on it. When you have a gyroscope, okay, and you write it as rigid in three-dimensional space, but it's because you have a cross product of the radius with gravity, and so you have this conservation of angular momentum that's causing it to stay in a fixed plane, that's causing it to rotate in a precession like a thing. But whenever you tilt it, it's always going to try to stay with the same amount of time rate of change with respect to the radius vector to the gravitational force. So it doesn't override gravity. It's what it is. It has to maintain torque because it's having that precession, because it's rotating, and that's going to cause it to go in a path that's a time rate of change with the cross product or the dot product. I don't remember. It's one or the other. I haven't looked in a while either.
Right.
But
okay, that's fine.
Not so much conservation of go ahead.
Oh, right. But that's fine. That's the point. But if you set a gyro going, even if and taking friction out of the equation and being able to keep a gyroscope rotating for whatever 24 hours, and there's plenty proof of that. It won't process.
Well, it will if you've got an accurate enough gyroscope. Bob from Globebusters.
No, because there'll be no force acting upon it. And I can bend it like that. I could put it like that. And as long as it's going fast enough, it'll hold its position there.
Well,
if it slows down...
There's mechanical gyroscopes.
But when it
there
slows
is mechanical gyroscopes that can show the 15-degree shift per hour. You know, how do you explain the gyroscopes that do show it?
No, mechanical.
No, that, yeah, no, there is. If you get a big enough, accurate enough, there's actually a video on MIT's YouTube channel of them building a mechanical gyroscope specifically to show this. If you get one that is accurate enough and big enough, then it will show that 15-degree shift. They knew this before there was digital and everything on it. It's, you know, a lot of gyroscopes aren't accurate enough to show
I'll
that.
Have to when go
you
look
get
at
one
that.
That is, but,
okay,
you know,
I'll go and look at that, but that would change.
So, yeah. Right. Okay. So I feel like we should move on. I mean, from gyroscopes. You know, I hope that you understand that I really wanted to go and look into the alteration of it, so we could have a good discussion. And I understand that what you're saying, but I have to disagree with your assumption that it's not gravity that is causing everything to work.
Your assumption's gravity in the first place, so.
Well, no, gravity is a mathematical law that can predict and explain things.
I can make it.
Fight the flat earth.
I can explain it without gravity, right? I can explain it without gravity.
You need gravity.
You've got to bring in this mystical force.
How can you explain it without gravity?
You can't measure it. Well,
weight times buoyancy plus height divided by density.
No, no, that's its natural. That's matter's natural direction in this atmosphere. Is towards the ground till it hits something.
Okay, you're saying that, but when matter is moving towards the ground, not only is it moving towards the ground, but it's accelerating. And, you know, I'm pretty sure you understand acceleration requires a force. So where's that force coming from? You know, we can do the calculations of why things are going down, but weight requires gravity as a function of it. There still has to be something that's given it a vector to go down. You can't just say it goes down because that's its natural state. There has to be something that is actually giving it a downward force.
Why does explain to me why then there has to be a force upon that to make it fall down?
Because acceleration requires a force. Because that's a proven scientific fact. Every time you can do the maths and physics and
height,
acceleration.
If you drop something from a height, that's creating force. Or well, it's not actually creating force. You can only measure that force when it's hit the ground.
There's still, you're missing the point. There's acceleration.
No, I'm not missing the point at all. Yeah, I mean, Neil, so what's acceleration? That thing's falling.
Acceleration requires a force, is my point. That's a fact that no one can dispute. Acceleration requires a force.
Not unless it's falling, it doesn't. It doesn't need it. Like, to push something or to project something out the way.
Why is it going down instead of sideways?
You can drop things, right? You don't need it. You don't need to rockets. Aiming down to drop, you can just drop it. But to propel something that way, any other, you need a force. But not to you've made something up when you're presuming that you need a force for things to fall.
No, I'm not presuming anything. I'm making an observation that it's accelerating at 9.8 meters per second squared, and I know that acceleration requires a force.
Yeah,
can you deny the fact that acceleration requires
that
a force?
Way and that way. Yeah, but
why is it different?
Direction.
No, it doesn't.
It depends.
Why does it depend on the direction? What gives it that direction?
Because
there has to be something that
needs a force. Yes,
it does.
You don't put a force into it. No, why?
Of course you do. You need a force for anything. If there's acceleration, there has to be a force.
Listen. It's a hot mess. Y'all have to let each other finish because you're
painful.
You're going over top of each other. You have to let each other finish.
Yeah, you guys are walking at each other, and you guys are talking so past each other that I'm just trying to take it all in and get the physics, and it's like you guys are speaking different languages. Trust me.
Take a breather.
And so take a breath. Fight the flat earth. Why don't you explain to him, like if you drop something off a cliff or something, why you have a negative acceleration of 9.8 meters per second squared towards the ground?
Well, I'm going to go simpler than that. I'm gonna say, right, I've got this book, okay, and I'm gonna let it go. So what you're saying, it's just gonna go down because, right? But because of what?
Because right?
Why does it not require? I haven't finished. Why does it require a force? Why does it not require a force to go that way, but it would require a force to go that way, or that way, or that way? Why not that way? What's changing? But, and again, I remind you, it's not just going that way. It's accelerating at a measurable speed. So I just need to know why it doesn't require a force to go that way.
Do you want an answer now? Right. Yep, yeah, because please. It's heavier than the medium it's in. Simple as.
Well, actually, okay, I'll go back to the book, right? Right?
Yeah,
you're saying
ahead.
It's heavier than the medium here, right? So the air here is less dense, yeah?
No, I said, yeah, you're not going to even suggest it. Why doesn't it float up? Because it's heavier than the medium.
Right, that point. But it's also heavier than the medium above it.
It doesn't matter. It's heavier than the medium below it, so it's going to fall due to weight. So what's the problem?
But it's also heavier than... Right, you're saying it's heavier than the medium below it.
It needs...
You guys have got to stop talking over
each
other.
I really don't want to use the mute button.
Let me finish.
I'm going to have to...
It's so bad. It's a hot mess.
Let me answer you. Let, so that I get it right, what you're saying. That it's because it has, that book has to accelerate downwards, and you're asking me why it doesn't go up the way. And I'm saying why it doesn't go up the way is because it's heavier than the medium below it as well as above it.
He's asking you what's causing the acceleration, Ali. He's asking you specifically what's causing the acceleration in the direction of droppity down. That's what he's asking.
It's weight.
Weight's not a force.
It doesn't
have to be
force
a force for acceleration.
It only needs a force to go up the way. Why should it have a force to go down the way? It is heavier than that, the medium that it's in. End of story, what's complicated about that? Why do you have to bring in a mystical force?
I'm not bringing in a mystical force. I'm making an observation that acceleration is happening. And it is a fact that acceleration requires a force, no matter the direction it's going. You're just saying it doesn't require a force going down because, but that makes absolutely no sense. Why? But it's also, but you're heavier. You say, then why doesn't it go up? Because it's also heavier than the medium above it. And in fact,
because
the medium above it is even less dense. But it's also heavier than the medium above it. And in fact, the medium above it is even less dense than the medium below it. So you're literally telling me, by your logic, that it should be going up.
No, I'm not. You're trying to make it sound as if that's my logic. I'm telling you it's the weight, because it's heavier than the medium that it's in. Whether it be below it or above it, it is naturally inclined because it's weight in this atmosphere that it goes down and it stops when it hits something. End of story. It's not complicated.
Why?
You don't need to add a... mystical
you do
theory,
why
by the way can I jump in real quick? There's a technical thing people in the live chat pointed out, and here to me weight isn't a force only for the fact that even though it's measured in newtons, but it's actually the object's, it's the force of gravity acting upon that object's mass, right? So it's the force of gravity that's acting upon that mass, that's what we're calling weight. So some people can say, well, weight's a force, it's measured in force, but I personally think it's the force of gravity operating on the mass itself. So maybe it's a technical point, but because weight is the force of gravity, right? Weight is, to me, isn't
no,
the
that's
force.
A good,
force
that's a good point. I like that. I like that, Steve. That's a good point.
Take it for what it's worth. I mean, that's how I remember it, is weight is the force of gravity acting upon the mass. So you can call that, you know, in a nutshell, a force, but it's actually not. It's the force of gravity on that object.
Is that within Newton?
Right, and I would say
basically a force.
Sorry. Yeah.
And I would say it's not gravity that's acting upon it. It's not a force. There's not any force. It's just falling as it is. But it's still
but it's
not
just
force,
falling.
Where you agree.
Right, because if you have that mass in a zero G environment, there's, you know, you have no more force acting upon it. So it's contingent upon that gravitational force being on it to have that weight. So weight itself doesn't exist unless you have a gravitational force with it, right? Weight equals mass.
No, it still does, but you can't weigh it. It still has that mass, but you can't weigh it, though. If it's floating in space, there's nothing, there's no real weight unless you, it, you know, you've got some way of measuring it if it bumps against you, but you can't actually physically weigh something that's floating, really. So you can't, it still weighs that. You know, if you took it down here in this atmosphere, it would weigh something, not because of gravity, it's because you can weigh things in this atmosphere. But we can't do it up there because things float up there. They don't fall anywhere. So I don't go with the gravity. You know, I don't need gravity. You don't need gravity to explain things.
Well, but anyway. We do. We all need gravity because the calculations are reliant upon gravity to be a thing. The buoyant force formula requires gravity to be a thing. And not only is it a thing, but it's able to calculate and predict what can happen. And you're still just saying that it goes down because that's its natural inclination. That makes no sense. Every other direction requires a force. We can't just say that one doesn't because that's its natural inclination. And like I said, it has acceleration. You have to explain why it accelerates. There has to be something acting upon it to make it accelerate. It's as simple as that. And you can't see an explanation for that downward force.
But it would, if I just dropped that, say the atmosphere was like infinity, right? And I went up to the top, as far up as I go to drop that object, and it was infinity, yeah? It would keep accelerating, wouldn't it?
Until it hits something. It would reach terminal velocity because of the buoyant force underneath
it. There's no friction, right?
But you just said the atmosphere would keep going up.
Yeah, but
you said if the atmosphere is all the way up, an atmosphere is what gives it friction.
Right, okay, so eventually it would just float then before it hit the ground.
No, it would reach terminal velocity, which is an equilibrium between the force of gravity and the buoyant force of air underneath it, and maintain that velocity until it reached the ground.
Right, so if it was, as I say, if it was infinite miles away, what would be the terminal velocity? You said 9.88 meters per second.
That's the acceleration of things within Earth's gravity, yes.
Right, so it exponentially accelerates. When does it stop? When it reaches the terminal velocity?
Yes.
So would you say that all objects have the same terminal velocity?
Well, the terminal velocity will be dependent on the mass of the object and the force down and the force up. It's an equilibrium, but most things will probably, if a bunch of people are jumping out of a plane doing skydiving together, all those people will end up going at the same speed because they're all traveling at terminal velocity and accelerating downward at the same speed. So terminal velocity is dependent on the forces acting on it going down and then the forces acting on it going up because of the buoyant force of air. It's an equilibrium. Nothing's going to go past that terminal velocity.
So are they all equal then?
Well, the gravitational force is equal in everything. It's the mass of the object is the variable.
So it's not as so there's like a terminal velocity for all different objects. Or different masses, shall we say. If we had different masses, for example, if we had the size, for example. Right, and you had two objects the same size, but one was denser than the other. Would they reach the same terminal velocity? Anyway, this is going off the subject. Forget that.
Terminal velocity has to do with the fact that you have wind resistance as it's dropping down, right? So if you have a greater surface area, it's going to have a higher degree of drag and resistance. That's what causes terminal velocity.
Right, so in a vacuum up in space, if I threw something, it would continue to accelerate.
Yeah, object. No. In it. Well, no, it wouldn't.
Wait a minute. Well, you've just said that the reason it reaches terminal velocity is because of atmosphere, right? So if you're in a vacuum and you throw it, it would continue exponentially accelerating. If I throw it at 4 meters per second.
No, because as you increase in acceleration, you then require more force to keep accelerating.
But wait a minute. What's stopping that? If there's no atmosphere there, there's nothing to stop that.
It wouldn't keep accelerating, but it would travel at a constant velocity because objects in motion will stay in motion unless there's a force stopping them.
Right.
Once
you impart some energy to that system, Ali, right? Once I throw something in space, right? It's going to go on a certain vector course, right? But there's no more energy going into that system. I'm not adding any thrust to it. I'm not adding any energy to it. It's not going to accelerate. It's going to stay at a constant velocity because there's nothing to impede it, nothing to slow it down. So it just keep going. I mean, you have minor things, like you have one proton every cubic centimeter, but that's going to be nominal. But it's pretty much going to stay at the exact same speed in the direction it's going, regardless of anything else, unless it's acted upon by another force, right? So if it moves towards Jupiter, right, now Jupiter becomes a predominant force, and its vector is going to change. Because as Flight to Flat Earth said, things that tend to stay in motion will change in the same vector unless acted upon by outside exerted force. So it's not going to accelerate. It's not going to keep going faster and faster and faster because there's no more energy going in that system once it's left your hand. Does it make sense?
But the reason you just explained that a thing reaches a terminal velocity because it's got drag with the atmosphere, yeah? But in space, mm-hmm. you don't have it. So when you throw it, it must continue to accelerate.
So you're taking away the planets, then you're taking away the force of gravity, which is causing the acceleration downwards. If you're just throwing something in space with nothing around, then once that initial energy has been dispersed in the acceleration when you throw in the thing, then it's just going to stay at that constant velocity unless there's another force acting upon it. If you're near a gravitational force like Earth, then the acceleration is going to kick in because there's a force bringing it down.
What happens if I throw it at the same speed as gravity then?
Same speed as gravity.
Well, gravity, yeah, you need to have an object around for gravity.
That would keep accelerating because it would never reach a terminal velocity because there's nothing up there. If I threw it at the speed of gravity, it would keep accelerating. Yeah, but it would be because I'd be thrown at the same speed as gravity, which is 9.8 meters per second squared, or whatever you want to call it.
But there's not a constant force on it. Gravity is a constant force that is pulling it down. Once you have thrown Once you've thrown it, if you say you've thrown it 9.8 meters per second squared, for that initial way you're throwing it, that is going to go at 9.8 meters per second squared, but then there's no more energy, and it's just going to go at a constant velocity. When you're on a planet, it's like when you're in Earth's atmosphere, in Earth's gravitational field, the reason it's accelerating is because there is a constant force on it. When you're throwing it, that's the force. It's done in space, right? And then there's no more force to give it acceleration after that. But if it's falling on Earth, there's a constant force because of Earth's gravitational field, which is the reason it would keep accelerating. If in space, that thing that you threw, you had a little rocket on it, it would then keep accelerating until the fuel was exhausted. And that's the thing. It would keep accelerating until the force was gone. Once there isn't a force anymore, it's not going to accelerate. It's going to stay at a constant velocity, which isn't acceleration. It's just a constant speed. It's not going to speed up anymore. Yeah, I can't make it any simpler than that.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty well spot on, man. I mean, think about this way, Ali. And by the way, I know this is between you guys, but this is just making my head freaking hurt.
No, that's all right.
And you're doing a great job, Flight to Flat Earth. But Ali, because I know you, maybe I'm trying to speak in a language you maybe understand better. But look, if I have a position here, and I go to this position here, that's called a displacement, right? You grant that? So yeah. Position one, position two, which is displacement there.
Yep.
Okay, so... The change of displacement is my velocity, how fast I'm moving from one place to another. Would you agree? That's called the first derivative of position, right?
Right, go on.
You want a derivative? Because I've talked about this before.
Yeah, yeah. A derivative is something. it comes from it comes from something else. So
it's a time rated, well, time rated change. Okay, so let me explain
right,
to
okay.
you. So right. if I have a change of position, right, the displacement is called, the time rate of change of that, the first derivative, would be called velocity. But if my velocity is changing, which is a change of direction or magnitude, right, either one, then that change of velocity, that's called acceleration, which is the second derivative with respect to the position. So what I would recommend is maybe you need to look into the kinematics here of what these terms mean, because all I hear is you, it's like the flat earth trying to explain these things, you're not understanding the terminology, and it's just leading to a quagmire of complete fuckery, to be honest with you, because these are basic kinematic understandings of what these terminologies mean in physics. So when he's saying things like acceleration, you have to understand what he means by acceleration. It literally is the time rate of change of velocity, or the second derivative with respect to position.
It's a change That's of what speed, he means by, basically.
Well, it's a change of velocity. Speed is a scalar. Velocity is a vector, right? So it could be a change of magnitude or direction. But this is why you're not conceptualizing it properly, that if I throw something, there's no more change of velocity there. The velocity is imparted, it's moving, it's going in direction, and it's going in a magnitude, but there's no more energy going in that system. It's no longer change acceleration. But if you went near a planet, what happens flight to flat Earth when you have a gravitational field now?
Well, this is how they got Voyager out of our solar system by slingshotting around Jupiter, wasn't it? So it's going, it has that initial energy whilst it's leaving Earth, and then it's traveling at a constant velocity as it goes towards Jupiter. And then as it got towards Jupiter's gravitational field, which is a lot bigger than Earth's gravitational field, it made the satellite speed up. And I think they did three orbits before they then changed the vectors of it using thrusts to then use that energy it gained in the acceleration to fire out of the solar system. And the reason it sped up was because it got towards the gravitational field of Jupiter, which gave it another force. But until it got to that, it was traveling at a constant velocity. It wasn't increasing in speed. It was just going the same speed.
Does that make sense?
Right.
Now?
Yeah, absolutely. But it still doesn't answer the fact is if I introduce that force at the same, the inertia into an object in a vacuum and accelerate it at 9.88 meters per second or whatever, it will continue at that rate. Because there's nothing acting upon that.
You realize that that's only the gravitational force of the Earth, right? Gravity is a
big and that's what you see brings things, and you see that's a force or whatever. So I'm introducing the same force.
Yeah, but then you're not giving it a constant force. You're just giving it that force at the beginning, and then no more.
Yeah, but that's all.
The thing is,
that's all that we. Right, listen, because that's all it would need, because there would be no gravitational pull, there'd be nothing fighting against that. So if I put that energy the energy needed to make that accelerate at 9.88 seconds per second or whatever, meters per second
meter
or
per
whatever
second
it
squared.
Is, if I put that in there, there's no
I think listen, this is no where the disconnects come in, because like what you don't understand is
you're
that
not connecting,
once that
you're
initial I am, and I'm trying to explain that you've got a disconnect between what acceleration and velocity is, because once you've given it that initial energy, it's not then going to continue having that energy. To continue accelerating, it needs a continual force, and you're not giving it a continual force. You can't compare one to the other.
Hang on, Ali. I don't think you're getting it, because you don't have the prerequisite knowledge to understand the topic properly. And
no, I don't agree with it, Steve.
Well, you can't agree or disagree.
I don't agree with it, and I don't care.
Ali, let me finish, please. You cannot agree or disagree without being properly informed. If you don't know the basics, you're not going to be properly informed to make an educated decision one way or another of what he's telling you or I'm telling you is correct or not. And the light feed is just. You know, they're basically saying, what's the point of this? And I agree. You're not really understanding a word of what is being explained to you, that if somebody went to go into a first-year college physics course, they would be all over this, right? They'd be like, oh, yeah, this is
no,
you know this already.
You're wrong. You're wrong. Sorry for interrupting.
Well, I'm not wrong. Okay? I'm telling
wrong.
You I'm not
wrong.
Let's go to a different topic.
Yeah, let's
go to a different topic.
Yeah.
But you're wrong. Okay. Let me just say, defend my position there. That you're wrong there thinking that I don't understand, or I'm not understanding. I do understand, but I'm not accepting. I'm not accepting the explanation that's been given. We started off with gyroscopes, and I didn't take it in the stars, and I said we shouldn't go there.
We're going to move on to another topic real quick. If you understand these topics, and I've already explained the velocity is the first derivative, acceleration is the second derivative. What's the third derivative of position then, if you understand this topic?
We were talking about
what all flat earthers are.
Inertia there. Right, so I don't... No, right, what's the third one then?
Jerk.
What's it called?
Jerk.
A jerk.
He was making a joke.
Yes, that's what it's called. It's called jerk.
All right, let's go to something different. What are your views on?
I'm tired.
Space existing.
Of course it does.
Good. All right, flat to flat Earth.
Okay, so if space exists, do you accept the observations that everything else in space that we can see is spherical?
Well, that's what I've got a problem with.
I bought my daughter a telescope for Christmas, and you know, there's only been a couple of clear nights in Scotland, I'm sure you're aware, but there's been a couple of nights where we've been clearly able to see spherical things in the sky, and everything that is observed is a sphere. All the other planets in our solar system is a sphere. The sun is a sphere. The moon is a sphere. So why isn't the Earth a sphere? What caused everything else to be a sphere but didn't do it to the Earth?
No, that's a weak argument, isn't it?
Well, not really.
It's a good question.
It's a question. You know, why is all that round, but we're... why is everything else spherical? Everything in the universe that we observe, but we're not. Why are we different?
Yeah, why could you look up there and say, oh, they're round, so we must be round?
Because there's nothing else that's ever been observed that's flat.
Yeah, you'd think the same properties would affect our planet.
You know, there's a reason why everything else is spherical. And I know you're going to hate this, but the reason is gravity. Once there's a certain mass of something, the gravitational force causes it to become a sphere. And that's why everything else that we observe is a sphere. And then we can look at everything that's happening throughout the universe, and it follows the mathematical law of gravity. We can use the calculations and the physics that we understand to explain and predict everything that's going on. And gravity is the thing that helps explain that. And if gravity is a thing and Earth is a thing, there is absolutely no way it could be that big and not be a sphere. Gravity would have made it into a sphere.
Well, they were predicting things 10,000, 20,000 years ago before science or whatever you call it, astronomers got a hold of it. So they're not really predicting new events in the sky or anything like that. They've been doing it for thousands of years.
They certainly couldn't predict things with the accuracy that we do.
Well, they certainly
and there's a lot of things that they couldn't predict that we can predict.
They could predict weather, hurricanes, and everything. So, using looking up into space and stuff like that is nonsensical to me.
I'd like to hear the answer to that question though, because I think it is a valid question: why everything else in the universe would be round, but we would be different. Why would the principles of physics out there be different for us?
Well, all we can see is like apparently seven planets. So they're the only things, and the sun and the moon, they're the only things that look round. Oh, the rest is just lights.
I would have to disagree with that. There's over 100 moons in the solar system that we can observe. There is a whole bunch of like protoplanets throughout the Kepler belt and everything. We can observe planets orbiting other stars that we can tell by looking at the dimming of light on the star as it passes what shape they are. Now, there's way more than seven things that we can see that are spherical.
All the stars. I mean, when you look up in the sky, it's full of stars. What do you think those are?
How do you know the shadows are crossing? How do you know they're not like you get black spots on the sun? How do they not know it's that?
What?
Because
it's very different.
The sun's over here.
Well, blacks. There must be, obviously, there's a different signal that comes off of black spots in the off the sun, right? So why are you using it in front of a star?
Wait. Are you talking about sunspots?
Right? Sunspots. Does it matter? You knew what I mean.
I'm trying to figure out if you know what you mean.
Which explanation? I was told they were. Because they were, this is going back a few years, because they weren't as hot as the outside, the brightness of the surrounding area hid the colour of it. That's got to be
about
20
years ago.
It's just a
contrast difference. If you couldn't see the rest of the sunspots would be very, very bright. It's just that they're less than their surroundings, so there's a contrast issue because of magnetic flux densities. But
I'm talking about like our background. Still pretty, you can look, sunspots you can go are very, country, very bright. You can look up and see skies that look like that. I mean, what is your opinion that you think those are?
I believe that their lights are on a different spectrum, on a different end of the light spectrum that we can't see,
but we can see
actually. But I believe that the atmosphere actually, the reaction of the light that they are producing reacts on the atmosphere, and it manifests as them little twinkling things. But they're obviously something producing a light source, but I believe that the atmosphere illuminates them.
I mean, that's quite a big claim. Do you have any proof of that?
Well, okay, I'll tell you. Right, well, actually, there's some fascinating photographs from the moon. You know, sorry, flat earthers, mm-hmm. but I do believe in the moon, that they actually took photographs, I think it was in 72, infrared of the stars. They had to take it in infrared. And it was quite a fascinating.
You do realize that we've actually seen the disk of Betelgeuse and Antares. I mean, we've actually have actual photographs of these stars. They are round, right?
Yeah,
they do.
The stars, and like I was saying about with you can look at the dimming of the stars, and you can tell by that what the planets are that are orbiting around it, and then we can predict what the orbit of the planets going around those stars are. And then we can use parallax observations to figure out how far away from their own star they are. And, everything else is a sphere. Everything that we have seen ever is a sphere. If it's big enough, its mass makes it a sphere. And I just don't understand why we wouldn't be a sphere if everything else is. What made them a sphere and not?
Well, that's not a bit. Just because you can't get your head around it doesn't mean that it's true. And I mean, that's what is you call it? Argument? Incredulity. Or what do you call it, Steve?
Well, I'd have to disagree because I can explain the physics that explain why everything is a sphere. Yeah. So I'm not arguing from incredulity. I'm saying that the physics of the observable universe says that everything should be a sphere. The physics that we can use to calculate and predict everything that happens says that everything should be a sphere if its mass is big enough. So why are those physics not affecting us?
They physics were taken on the assumption that they see the moon, it's a sphere. So we must be a sphere.
There's no assumption.
No, it has to do with the fact it's at ground state. It's at the lowest potential energy for that system. Things like to be at equilibrium, and spherical is the lowest state of potential energy in a field, like a gravitational field, because of its own mass. So it's going to be at least spheroid in some way. Most objects generally are, because that's the lowest state of potential.
I mean, right? All the when they show water in zero G, it always seems to form. It always forms a sphere.
Because
Steve said, it's the lowest state of equilibrium.
That's because it bonds together. The bonds, the
surface tension wouldn't. Yeah, but the surface tension would be dependent on the surface area, and no matter how big it is, it's still going to form a sphere.
No, it literally holds itself together. water
because of gravity
holds itself, the bonds.
Yeah, but why is it hydrogen?
No, no, it's because the water bond is because of the bonds. The
there's Van der Waal bonds.
Right, and they're stronger than the will for it to fly apart.
The will for it to fly apart.
Well, you know what I mean. To want to go.
I actually didn't know about that one.
To do. It does. It holds itself together. Water holds itself together. So.
Well, it's called Van der Waal forces. They're intermolecular bonding between the water molecules.
Yeah, and it doesn't create pressure on the outside. It's because of that. It's actually pulls in. It holds itself together, so it doesn't create a pressure on the outside of it. So it's not pressurized on the outside.
Okay. Anything else?
Still don't feel like I've had any of my questions answered, but
we could move on to other...
It's the explanation of why the physics are different for us as to everything else.
When did you ask
why
that?
Aren't we a sphere?
Oh, right, that.
That's been my whole point.
Do we have to be?
Because of our mass.
No, the presumed mass.
No, the mass has been measured accurately.
But the point is, I don't want to go into that guy, man. But on about the, just because the moon is round and the sun is round and Saturn and all that, the planets are not perfect, their little moons are not perfectly round, they're lumps of rock. Why didn't they? Oh, they've came off another planet or something. They've been battered off another planet, like the moon. Allegedly came off of us, a collision, and formed itself into a round ball. Yeah, of course. Yeah,
the mass is sufficient
But when that gets explained to me, that doesn't cut any ice with me. That's not good enough for me, and that's why I don't buy it.
Isn't that just the argument for incredulity on your part?
No, yeah. It's not. No, I'm. No, it's not incredulity.
Can I ask a question?
I think about it.
Just baseline, but why would, or let me ask, it's two questions actually. Number one, why do you think that there is this cover up to not reveal what the true shape of the Earth is? That's number one. And number two, with all the people that are involved in the space agencies around the world, how does something like that stay between them all for so long?
Well, I just think that when I see satellites go up there or what's happening up there, I just see like military. That's who's up there. It's the military. And then you're going to national security, and you know how they hide things under national security. How many astronauts are there? There's not really, I don't think, it wouldn't be a hard thing to cover up, because most of the people that work it on the ground level, you know, they're not up there in space or whatever. They're sat in front of computer screens and that. But
they're still doing like work.
It's
like,
all about,
you know.
Well, I think that they're just, for some reason, they're deceiving either the size of it, right, the size of the place, or what space actually is, what's actually happening up there. And it's to do with military. It's certainly to do with the military, because they're, well, they piggyback every single satellite. So I would say national security and stuff like that.
Okay,
that's the best. And these people sign one thing. And, sure. And the reason that maybe the astronauts don't say anything is because they'll sign an Official Secrets Act. And that means a lot to these people, because if they're military, they'll go behind it, and they've got their job, their wife, and their family. So
let's say I grant you that. For the past, you know, maybe 200 years, but we're going back hundreds of years when a thing of like the military that we're talking about these days, this trying to, you know, be big brother and look over everything, that concept didn't exist. So what would be the motive back then to change it from a flat earth to a round earth?
Oh, I never said it was. I don't even know. I think, you know, you've got to go back tens of thousands of years, I think, actually, to find our culture and actually even believed in the the flat Earth, but I certainly know why they started promoting why the church certainly started promoting the ball is because they were getting worried that now science was taking over. They were beginning to discover stuff, and they realised, well, you know what I mean? Like any organisation that wants to survive, it just embraced it and ran with it and took it over, basically co-opted it and took it over. And that's why they promoted it. They didn't shut it down or anything like that. They encouraged it. Whereas the story
still doesn't
says that they shut it down.
Change that physics is right. Whether it was co-opted by the church or whatever, it still doesn't change the fact that physics is right. The physics that we have that explains the universe and the mathematical formulas and mathematical laws are all right, and they're all dependent upon everything that we understand. And if everything works like that, and all the laws and the formulas are right, which we've proved they are because they work, then the Earth is round. And right, unless okay, we'll, for some reason somehow they have like changed the nature of physics, that you can't explain there being a flat Earth.
Well, they've changed the definition of gravity.
No, they haven't.
Well, they have. It's an upward acceleration. The same. They describe it the same as the Flat Earth Society. What? But it's an upward motion. It's an upward acceleration.
No. No, it's a downward force. The Flat Earth Society subscribed to a theory of universal acceleration that says that the whole Earth is moving up at 9.8 meters per second squared, which would have its own problems with relativity anyway. That, you know, but within a year, we'd be traveling within 354 days.
It'd be faster than light.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
You
know, let me finish in.
What does the word orthogonal mean to you?
Oh, Kyle, no.
Orthogonal or a tangent? Take your pick. Pick one. 50-50.
Right, if I've got a triangle and there's like one.
The Earth is one. Not Blake.
Allie, come on. You've been doing this a long time and you still don't know what tangential or orthogonal means? I mean, Allie, come on. Dude.
What do you mean, orthogonal?
Take a best shot.
What is orthogonal? These are words. Well, a tangent isn't that the intersection of a line or something like that.
Tangent's what Steve goes on every night.
An angle yeah, exactly. Intersects another line or something like that.
He's like so tangents. Close. You want to? I mean, it's like he's like almost there, but not quite.
I don't care. It's immaterial. The point is immaterial.
It's immaterial.
Geometry. Geometry. Fuck it. Right.
This is one thing that confuses me,
guys. Wait a minute, let me think. Let me just say something. Let me think. God, that's hard. But let me just say something. I usually say things about something. But it's like I just don't agree with I don't accept the explanations that I'm getting. It sounds that they begin to what I just said there. It's a fact that science, Einstein's whatever his equations, whatever they pulled out of, they changed into. It's an upward acceleration. Not a downward acceleration.
No, it's really not.
What the hell you're talking about?
Oh, sorry, yes. Yeah, I know. One more. Go on. But it is a fact. It is a fact.
It's really, really not. I'm sorry, no, but you're completely wrong there.
And do you know what I do? I won't even put out a bet. I won't even put out a bet there because I only bet when I'm going to win, but I wouldn't want to take money off you. But it's a fact. But anyway, okay. I'll come back to that at some point.
I have an equilateral triangle here. What are the measurements of the interior angles?
So the sides are 1, 1, and 1.
Right.
What are the measures
60,
of the angles?
60, 60, 60.
Boom.
Yeah. Well done.
Got it.
You are smarter than Anthony Riley.
Yeah, if you haven't seen Anthony Riley do this,
well,
you have to watch it.
I was going to get it out earlier, episode 6 of Flurfs Are Idiots, Sleeping Warrior, will be out about 20 minutes after this show finishes. So just saying.
Well, he just says some really stupid things.
He does cherry pick stuff.
I like Ranty because Ranty actually proves the flat Earth model is bullshit. He actually gives evidence for Ranty.
There is an interesting question.
No, that's just
the
how you see it. Weird. That's how you see it.
What are your views on the ice wall? Does it exist or not?
Yeah, that's a kind of hard. That's, I believe I'll answer it straight. The ice wall. Well, if I go, as I say, I believe what I see is the flat earth. So the water has to be contained. It has to be contained in some way, right? If it is, as I believe, it's flat, it has to be contained. That's just physics for me anyway.
Why does it have to be contained?
It changes.
Right, the natural physics, this is something that a lot of flat earthers say, that water has to be level and contained, but it's a misconception, right? If I could just explain this, it's a total misconception.
Let me just...
The physics of water is that it will conform to the forces acting upon it.
Ali, hang on.
That's the physics of water, is that it will conform to forces acting upon it. And if those forces happen to be the walls of a container, that's the force acting upon it. And I know you're going to hate the answer, but... do you know what the force is acting on Earth?
Gravity.
The water conformed?
Gravity. Wait. But anyway, so about the water, right? Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. Let me just say about the water. Right, about the water, right? So I said it need to be contained, but if it had a big enough area to spread over, right, I think possibly even by its mass, if it was 100 or 500 mile long, I think it could possibly, you know, once it's want to spread out, I think it would, if it wasn't wind blown, I think it could actually sit, you know, like the top of a cup. I still think it could possibly sit like that because of the, you know, it stopped trying to push engine. Out, so it's settled in its, well, it's just settled like that. So that's the viscous, you know how you see if you look at a cup or whatever it's called, you can see the water. You can actually see the water curving. On the top of the cup.
Putting a countdown on real quick. You can keep talking. I'm just putting a little countdown.
Work with me real quick. Do you agree that if you have two bodies of mass...
Don't confuse me with big words. Yeah, but don't confuse
I'm going to use monosyllabic words. Steve, I'm going to try to keep this very, very simple. I have two balls. Okay, can you imagine me having two balls?
Picture most people do.
Two balls. Okay,
I'm
going to bring it down to grade school level, and even in the gutter. So I have two balls. Would you agree that there is some kind of attraction between my balls?
Yeah,
not between you and my balls, but between the balls themselves.
Yeah, yes, if they get close enough, yes.
Okay,
oh my God.
I'm trying to get through this, man. So if my balls are almost touching each other, they're going to have some force between
them,
right?
Just fucking stop, man.
Okay, so imagine having a single ball, okay?
No.
And I have water around it, like a 3D sphere. Okay, so I got this water around it. It's all going to be attracted to that sphere. So if the sphere has a lot of mass, has a lot of gravity, all that water is going to be attracted toward it. It's going to be around the ball. You got to have it around the ball, man. Balls are important.
If you thought that was going to convince me and you beat a ball earther, that was cruel. I'm sorry, Steve.
So the ball,
trying to make a joke about Kevin's experiment and his genitals.
Just don't let the balls touch. If you don't, aren't touching, you're okay.
Well.
Yeah, but no, sorry, that's not convinced me. I'm still going away.
People are just tuning in right now. We're really going, what the fuck is Steve talking about?
Let's go to the final thoughts, I guess.
Yeah, final thoughts.
Fight the fighters.
The balls are too much for me to think about.
I think you're almost getting stuff, and for some reason, at some point, it just goes off on a tangent, and I just, you know, the guys are right and the chat are right that it seems to have just been going around in a circle, because we're almost agree up to a point, and then you just stop agreeing with the logic and the sense and the physics of everything else. And I think that no matter how much I explain these things to you, you're still just going to say no, because I don't accept it. And that doesn't make sense to me, because everything else works. The physics that we use and the maths that we use and the mathematical laws and equations, they all work to predict and calculate everything that we know. But then for some reason, according to you, everything just stops working when it's around the flat earth. And that that just doesn't make any sense in any kind of way as far as I'm concerned. So I think I've shown here that you have a lack of knowledge about the actual physics of the universe. And maybe if you spent some time studying the actual physics rather than what you think is physics, you might come to the understanding that the Earth isn't a fucking magic space pizza. It's an oblate spheroid with a circumference of 25,000 miles that's been demonstrably proved millions of times. Europe would have to be bigger. Is way, way, way bigger. You know, there is, I've at last count when I was looking, there's 24 companies that will actually take you on an excursion to the South Pole, and you can stay there overnight. There's people recently that have gone across it, and it wasn't an ice wall. It was a round continent because the Earth's round. I'm done.
That would be a good, I think, a good piece of our show, Steve, if, like, we sent Fight the Flat Earth and Allie to the South Pole to be our Ends of the Earth correspondent, our senior Ends of the Earth correspondents. What do you think?
We had Landon Curt Noel call me from Iridium Satellite from the South Pole. He actually called me from there. There actually is, I found out, a Flat Earth cruise that a bunch of Flat Earthers are getting together to cruise
and they're using
navigation based upon a round Earth to get there.
God help them.
Oh, you can't write that. By the way, Allie, how do you explain this? This behind Steve and I, this is actual footage from NASA. So how do you explain this if Earth isn't?
I mean, it looks so fake. It has real to be real, right?
Well, it's up there, real. Yeah. It's real, man. It's real. I can't dispute that.
All right.
I'm positive, baby.
All right, Allie. Give us your final thoughts.
Yeah. All right. My final thoughts is I got kind of what I expected. I got treated very well enough.
We love you, Allie. We just give you shit because we like you.
Yeah, but it doesn't affect me kind of thing. I still hold true to my opinion. Fight the Flat Earth, you've not convinced me in any way at all whatsoever. And I could say exactly what you said there. I could say the same to you. You're not willing to actually even conceptualise either. You want to be part of a gang, or you want to be popular, or you better get loads of subs and stuff like that. It's whatever you're up to, but and that's what's holding you back from even looking into it. You won't even look into it. I'm honest enough with myself to say, and when I get evidence it'll have to be good evidence, and when it will, this will be the first place I'll come straight out and admit. I always admit when I'm wrong, and if I find evidence, I'll bring it forth. So
you don't think that giants blew the moon from glass, right?
No, I'm not one of them ones.
Okay, just checking.
But they are interesting
and
people.
You don't think people that the Earth was made by dragons distributing the continents about either,
Oh,
right?
Yes. In fact, let's see if I can do this before we close out. I think this is worth a look.
So when we were doing the debate with Edgewise, I usually write notes during debates, and that was the entire notes that I got.
I gotta tell you, I don't think anything was coherent from him. I didn't even know where he was going with half that. It was just nothing I could even begin to even try to discuss with him. It was just bizarre.
Well, I'm gonna pull up. I'm gonna pull up his latest video. And I want you to see what he has found, because this is truly, This is truly groundbreaking, y'all. I mean,
is this the one directed at us, or is it a new one?
Yeah, it's the one directed to us. God, the title of the video is "Non Sequitur: Fight the Flat Earth. Time to Man Up."
I've always wanted to man up.
Let's see what he's got for us.
One of these days.
Okay. Tell me if you guys are going to be able to hear this too.
All right. The end screen, the end card.
Yeah, I'm there.
Okay. All right. Let's
Steve, do this. Talk to people about something for 2 seconds while I pull this up.
What do they want me to talk about, man? We just got done trying to explain to Allie some basic physics concepts. I mean, Allie, we like you, man. You've been a great sport about this, but God,
I mean,
you're nice.
To be fair to both me and Allie, it's 5 o'clock in the morning here.
Here we go.
Excuses. No, I'm kidding.
All right.
Do it.
Let's see what the answer is.
You're awesome, man.
I can't hear anything.
Okay, here we go. Listen,
what's
bird
going
feathers.
On here?
Are you ready, Steve?
I'm ready. Do it. Do it, man. No! No!
Yes,
oh, my
Africa,
God.
Yes.
That is not an astronaut. It's a freaking...
Look at this big bird.
...priest that was
look.
Going to sending into
look.
On the altar.
Look.
No!
Dragon head.
No, you... I
Dragon
can't.
Skull.
Stop it.
Imprint.
No.
Cross-sected out.
Oh, they don't have any audio from the video, by the way. But you, can they hear us?
Yeah, they do.
I'm dying here.
There's the Pakalka.
I can hear the audio.
Yeah, they can hear.
So he's saying that ancient
dragon head
was actually
look.
That
oh.
big.
There it is, guys. The dragon fossil.
This dude needs to lay off his psychedelics, man.
Okay, I want to point out one thing before we close out of this, though. These right here he's saying are bird. It's an eagle. Look, see the beak?
No.
It's a giant
what
fossilized eagle, and there's its feathers.
The audience decide. I could tell you what this is.
Rock formation?
Paradelia?
Oh, man.
And why does he think
that's
this
a,
proves
that's
anything
that,
that we
Earth.
Didn't...
God. God, come on, that's what.
Why? Edgewise, I don't know how you want exactly us to man up, but... here, you know,
he wants
you know
to come
to
on
us.
And debate me again.
Oh, well, he knows where to find us.
He's like I said. He left so many messages, comments that it like filled my spam folder was ridiculous, and he is desperate to come back on here and debate me again.
Over what?
I mean,
the
if
giant
you want
eagle.
The biggest clusterfuck ever.
Yeah, what is that a debate? Just not even a worthy discussion. He blew his load the first time and said, hey, here's all this freaking shit that I think I see. Well, you're wrong. Okay, move on. What's there to talk about?
You don't...
He's telling us to man up, but who's the right. one that hung up on that call and then ran away?
He... Look, you can't... You True. Cannot follow or beat... African Sahara fossilized dragon, okay? That's, when you do that, that's your move. It's it after that. You
yeah,
can't
he blew his load. Yeah, he got nothing left, man.
But if he wants to try, come on, you know, Flatter Day is Flatter Day's the day. So just send me a message.
Maybe we should have Allie and him go at it. Flat Earther against Dragon Seer or
no,
something.
We need Khaleesi and Tyrion Lannister to go against him.
Ali, what would you say to him? Yeah. Seriously, from your point of view, what would you say to him? Well, yeah, he literally thinks that all the continents and that are like petrified dragons. One of them's eating a giant fish. Like these things have to be thousands of miles big, and that's what caused the continents and stuff. What would you say to him?
Well, I would say that, you know, I wouldn't go along with his theory and point out things why I don't believe it. So.
Well, you turned it around.
Okay.
You know, after all,
like,
you turned it around.
What can I say? I believe, look, what could I say to him? I believe in the flat earth.
You could say, fuck off. That's absolutely bullshit. There are no dragons.
We do it better. but I tell you what, Allie, you know what?
People. Sorry.
Allie, next week, dude, we're going to have some shots together, you and I. You were nice enough to donate, and I'm going to get some good, decent whiskey or something, and you and I, We're just going to drink and not talk about flat Earth, but we're just going to talk about all kinds of different fuckery. Sound good?
Well, I want to have a discussion with you on because I'll tell you why. Because I was pissed off with you because you were getting the flat earthers. You would talk so bad about them, and I kind of take it a wee bit. It hurts a wee bit, right? That's why it took so long to get it. But then that bottle of whiskey that I promised you about 4 months ago, because I had to say, fuck him. But you were on, I think, about a couple of weeks ago or something like that, and you were on about objective morality. Mm-hmm. You were having a discussion, and you were getting pelters, but you were sticking up for your opinion. We share the same opinion. You know, I'd like to talk about that, actually, and a bit of philosophy as well. Because I can learn, you know, I'm always open to learn good conversations.
I'm down for
make sure, Ali, that you have your definition of atheist and agnostic written down so that you can give it to him when he's ready. That's a prerequisite. He has to know that. So,
and objective morality.
Yeah, but I know what Steve is. I've known Steve for a while. He's explained it so many times what he is as an agnostic, so I get it. Yeah, I get it.
A flat earther understands it. A flat freaking earther, okay? Not hard. Thank you.
There's another backhand comment for you, Ali. Tell him to fuck off.
Yeah, I know. I've been taking them all night.
All right, guys.
Even a fly.
thank you both.
I love your shirt, though. Great. You look great, Ali. You look great.
Thank you both for coming on and having a civil conversation. I almost forgot what those were. Those were like here on Saturdays. Yeah. The past ones
this has been one of the most pleasant experiences I've had.
He's a nice guy. Dude, you can't say that he's not. Well, Ali's a nice dude.
He's a nice guy.
To be fair, we have put...
There's a lot of flatterers that are quite wild.
With the Dragon Lord, with Flat Earth Jesus, Mind of God... Who else did you battle?
Scotty Storm.
Yeah. So,
Edgewise.
Yeah, Edgewise. So, next week, guys, I don't know if you heard me announce this in the last show, but we did an episode about paleontology with Dr. Don Protheroe, who is a world-renowned geologist, paleontologist. The guy's resume is unbelievable. Written... I think over 30 books, but he recently wrote a book about flat earth. And so following his appearance on here, we got brave and we asked him if he would be willing to come and have a discussion with a flat earther. And he said he would love that. So, Dr. Don will be here next. I always want to go say Friday, but it's Saturday, Flatter Day. Next Saturday, Dr. Don will be here, and you do not want to miss that, do they, Steve?
Nope. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
I actually watched a few of his videos. I watched a few of his lectures when you had him on a couple of weeks ago. Went on YouTube. He's got a few. He was an interesting dude, man. Very interesting dude, given his lectures. They were quite, interesting.
Also, I don't know if you guys know this, but Dr. Grady McGurdy, who is a... Young Earth creationist, very big Young Earth creationist, and got some attitude. He'll be here Friday, so look forward to that. And then we've got Trevor Valley coming on Wednesday. So it's the week of the Dino Dudes.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. All right. Anybody got anything clever they want to end on?
No, I just want to thank Ali for actually having a nice conversation again. Ali, I wouldn't mind having another conversation with you at some point. I actually enjoyed that.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And don't forget tonight, we might be... Yeah. Oh, good.
And again, in 20 minutes after this show finishes, I'll be premiering my new episode of Thrifts Are Idiots.
And by the way, thank you guys for 22,000 subscribers. We just hit 22 about 15 minutes ago. Thank you very much. And in return for that, Steve and I have a surprise for you all. Steve?
I'm going to show my nipple.
No. Tonight. Tonight.
Tonight. Tonight at 1 o'clock in the morning, my time, Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern time, we're going to be having a late night stream where we have two people that have a Ouija board and going to be calling up spirits and summoning them live on camera. I've seen their setup. It's pretty nice, actually. So that's going to be like 4 hours from now. So take some naps and then tune in.
And all you UK people, you have no excuse now. No excuse. What time is it in the UK?
9 o'clock.
It's 5 past 5.
It'll be nine o'clock
for them. When, yeah.
Good deal. Well, I'm going to end
five
on.
Past six.
I just watched a Vsauce video before I came and did our power stream. So I'm going to end on the old Vsauce sign off. And as always, thanks for watching.
End card. End card.
God, that's my job.
God! You did one job.
I had that so perfectly, too.
Fucking amateurs, man. How long you guys
been doing this for a while?
And as always, thanks for watching.